From the strange world of Ghosty Leaks, this is Ghosty Leaks, the podcast, taking you to the other side and back again. I'm the author of Ghosty Leaks, MJ Peter, and this is the first story read-through of the book Ghosty Leaks. Welcome to the other side. This is your first horror. If we refuse to submit to the struggles of life, does it mean we've won? Or are we simply making the best of everlasting defeat? As she closed the office, she pretended she couldn't see the advancing menace, perhaps hoping this meant it couldn't see her. A calendar on the wall screamed for attention. Friday had just two squares between it and her. Time was running out. If she didn't pay the money by then, she would lose the house. She straightened the photo of Maisie as a baby, leaving her desk tidy and ignoring the uncomfortable reminder. She carried on as if everything was normal, just like she always did. Leaving the office, she hurried along the busy street with everyone else who was trying desperately to make it home through the tearing rain. A surging swarm of home-time zombies besieged the pavement, trying to avoid being consumed by the sudden biblical weather. Her umbrella felt like thousands of razor-sharp daggers were trying to slice through, ripping at its flimsy protection. Through the fading light, tons of icy cold liquid plummeted to earth. Pursued by these freezing spikes, she hurtled like a train with no driver to the bus shelter. At times like this, Marie Sanders tried to forget the warm car which used to ferry her home. The beloved VW Beetle had long since gone to the bailiffs. Deep in thought, she barely noticed the rain stop. Ominous dark clouds waited passively above, but for now, she could dispense with the brolly. She straightened herself and stretched back into human form, shedding the hunched-over creature she had become. Only then did she notice a brand new shop where Cushing's Butchers used to be. She would often avert her eyes from shop fronts or indeed any temptation to spend money she did not have. This time, however, something called her attention to this new presence. A handwritten poster hung in the large wood and glass-fronted window. Art gallery, complimentary commissions, today only. This really piqued her interest. Complimentary. That means free, doesn't it? She thought. A freebie at this time in her life seemed like a bit of luck at last. At the front of the Victorian building, she stood looking up. There was still discoloration to the red bricks and the dirty outline of the word Butchers. She stepped forward, peering inside, pressing her hands and face up against the cold, leaded glass. Inside, there was little trace of the former layout. It had all been replaced with beautiful wood panelling and ornate light fixings. Dozens of paintings clung motionless to the walls like insects caught in a web. Others leaned silently against the panelling. It looked open for business as a hypnotic warm light invited her in. Maybe there was still time to claim a free piece of art. A sudden rush of excitement coursed through her body as she reached for the large, round brass handle and pushed the door open. A vintage crackling sound, perhaps an old record player, was just audible inside, though she couldn't see it. In childhood, her gran had played this tune endlessly. She was quite sure it was a Liberace record, and he was playing Tchaikovsky's haunting Piano Concerto No. 1. It brought back the memory of losing her. It had been a very long time since she went missing. The door caused a bell to sound. As if on cue, a man materialized, popping out like a ghostly jack-in-the-box. He stood statuesque behind a huge antique mahogany counter at the back. He startled her so much that she jumped feebly, letting out a gasp. This caused the man to smile without trying to disguise his obvious amusement. Instantly, fear turned to annoyance. At once, he spoke.
"Don't be afraid. There's nothing to fear," he said, grinning inappropriately.
She didn't share his humour. He tried to make light of it too quickly, with no concept of how creepy he looked standing there. She hoped this was not the artist, having taken an instant dislike to him, instinctively. He stood fairly tall, maybe 6 feet or so. He was quite old, and dressed in a dark suit, which hung awkwardly from his emaciated frame. An obvious wig, all wiry and coarse, sat clumsily on his head, and flesh-coloured makeup was smeared thickly across his rubbery face. A mouth full of stained yellow teeth gleamed when he smiled. He was like a ghastly mannequin. "You really scared me," she said curtly, as the smile vanished from his face. "You wish to commission a painting?" came the flat response. Was this a question, or was he telling her so? "Well, I was just curious, really," she said, regaining her composure. She looked around at the paintings. None of them had caught her eye until now. Most of them had name tags, presumably the commissioner of each piece. What struck her immediately was the foul content of each canvas. All depicted scenes of a bloody, violent nature. At the very heart of every one was a person, either a man or a woman. A few showed whole families. The images were swirling visions of hell on earth, raging red and orange fires, blood-soaked brawls, terrible accidents, disasters, and the most graphic, violent assaults imaginable. As her eyes were savage, she took a sudden, sharp breath, turning back to the man. He had been observing her reaction silently with a fake smile. The desk provided a welcome shield between this corpse and her. "Are they all like this? Is this the kind of thing you get for free?" she said sarcastically. She couldn't believe anyone would want it, even if it was free. "Everyone is different. Not all finish in the same way," he said, tilting his head slightly to one side, perhaps to appear more inviting. It didn't work. He was quite repulsive, and appeared to be scanning inside her somehow. Looking at the larger paintings, her gaze fell upon something obscene. It showed a man walking into the path of an oncoming train. Each stage of this horrific tragedy was mischievously crafted, forming a gigantic, hideous monstrosity. It gave a sharp shock and was extremely difficult to look at for very long. The man was stepping from a busy platform into the path of an impossibly fast train. Incredible detail revealed a broken look on his face and a window to his soul. He had lost everything. The blood, spray, and detritus of the collision fell all over the train, the floor, and even the commuters. It was so cruelly grotesque, it made her stomach turn cartwheels. "Oh, for goodness sake," she said, unable to control her offence at such a god-awful image. "People actually pay for this." He paused for a moment. "If one were to pay, the price would be high. These pieces are commissioned for free," he said, pushing an art magazine across the counter. With a long bony finger, he delicately opened it to a page about halfway through, indicating for her to read. This meant she must approach him. The odd entity stared at her, devoid of emotion. His eyes were that awful yellow heavy drinkers get, or very sick people. She hesitated and cautiously stepped forward. She was still reeling from the collection on the walls, clinging like horrid barnacles to a phantom galleon. She was now much closer to him and could detect an odour. It was an oil or a herb of some sort, but she couldn't identify which. It wasn't familiar or pleasant. She reached down and slid the magazine closer. The article was entitled "The Ultimate Art Investment Pieces," and it showed a picture of the oddity now standing before her. He was listed as the director of the Black Arts Gallery. She looked up and realized that he had not broken his gaze even whilst she read. He made her skin crawl, but she did not show it. "So, who is the artist?" she said, raising a hand, as if to pluck the answer from the air. He continued to stare, and after a brief but very intimidating pause, he spoke. "The artist is very private. I conduct all business. They all come with a lifetime contract." She noticed now that he spoke in a virtual monotone, almost no expression to his words. It was like he was reading from a script, or simply a puppet for some nasty business. "You mean a guarantee?" she said, frowning slightly in confusion. There was another very awkward and prolonged pause. "No, a contract." Reading on, her heart jumped as she found the next sentence. "This art had an incredible financial return after a very short time."
The article read, "Miss Henry of Auckland purchased a piece for £4,700 3 years ago and recently sold the work for £78,000. If she hadn't known she was still being observed by the beast, she might have danced around the gallery. Instead, thousands of thoughts flew silently through her mind, her apprehension now clouded by excitement and opportunity. Divorce had provided a house she could no longer afford, but now there was hope. She looked up at him, barely able to get her words out. "I want to claim a free work of art, please," she said, unable to disguise her excitement. The man did not speak or move for a moment. After another agonizing pause, he beamed that yellow, toothy smile. From the depths of the counter, he produced a folder containing her contract. He slid this across to her, very slowly, perhaps to prolong her anticipation or build the excitement. He kept his horrible white skeletal finger pressed onto it as he leaned in. She recoiled until he removed his hand. "And I don't have to pay a penny for this." She was now ignoring his behavior and the content of the paintings. She was preoccupied. It couldn't be true. Pay nothing but get something she could sell for debt-busting profit. He slid a pen across the counter, scratching it loudly on the wood. "And I just pick one off the wall and take it away, or..." she said, glancing around at the pictures and blocking out the creep's mannerisms. He frowned and looked disappointed, shaking his head slowly from side to side. "You will commission a new piece," he whispered. "How much would this normally be to commission something?" The man squinted at her, as if the question was vulgar. "New commissions of this type are currently priced at £7,450, plus tax," he said, blinking just once at the end of the sentence. Incredible! She was going to make the best investment of her life and secure some capital for the future. The only issue here was that these pieces were so disgracefully offensive, hers would surely end up like these other horrors. "Oh well," she thought secretly, "I won't be hanging on to this crap." She intended to sell it quickly and picked up the pen to sign. Swiftly, she read over the contract with a muted feeling of good fortune. She looked at the conditions and thought she must have finally discovered a catch. Somewhere in here, there would be a space for her bank details, and the free painting wouldn't really be free at all. "Conditions of your complimentary Black Arts Commission. 1. You and any immediate family members must appear in the piece." This meant that Maisie would have to appear in the painting too. This concerned her. The gallery's style was disgusting. The thought of a 6-year-old, or indeed any child, appearing in such a thing was... This was tempered against the thought of financial security, something she and Maisie didn't have. She bit her lip, nervously. It was in everyone's best interest. A small fortune she couldn't pass up. She descended to the next condition. 2. You may not refuse your commission. You must display the art prominently in your home at all times for the lifetime of the contract. Well, she wasn't about to refuse a freebie, was she? But how would they know if she obeyed the display rule? What if she just signed her life away, but then put the piece in the loft where it couldn't offend? It wasn't as if anyone would be watching, was it? She fell to the next condition, even stranger still. You may not destroy the commission under any circumstances. After reading this, she looked up at the man, who had barely moved a muscle since the last time their eyes met. This says I'm not allowed to destroy it. Why would anyone need a condition telling them not to smash up their free art? A stifled laugh accompanied her question. This was ridiculous. How would anyone know if she destroyed it? What if there was an accident? The man broke his stare momentarily, looking down at the contract. Very slowly, he raised his eyebrows and shrugged his shoulders, playing dumb. But she could tell he knew. I just sell the paintings. She looked back down at the odd contract. Until now, she hadn't noticed that the paper was very thick, almost like parchment or hide of some sort. She read on. If any rule is broken, payment in full and an additional fee must be paid to the Black Arts immediately. What the hell was this additional fee? She was just about to ask when the bell at the front of the shop rang. Coming into the gallery was a very smart, handsome man with a brown leather briefcase. Hello, I've come to collect my painting. Hope it'll fit in here, he said, pointing to the briefcase. The director's eyes locked with hers. This wasn't supposed to happen. It was as if a big dirty deal had been interrupted. "Customers are to wait outside if collecting," he said, quickly focusing on Marie again. "Do you want the free painting, madam? I have other business to attend to," he said hurriedly. She detected urgency in his voice, a momentary loss of control. The living skeleton emerged from behind the counter, making its way to the customer, whispering as he passed. "You can always just pay for one another time," he said, emphasizing the word pay deliberately. He had been on the ropes following the surprise arrival, but instantly the situation was reversed. She took the bait, grabbing his arm to stop the deal getting away. Even through the suit, he felt cold and stiff. She let go instantly. "No, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have grabbed your... What I mean, I do want the art," she said hastily, determined not to lose her free lunch. He stopped beside her and sighed with a staged sympathy. "Then please sign here," he said, pointing to the contract. She picked up the pen and quickly scrawled her name as if her whole life rested upon it. As the pen began to move, she saw a small amount of very fine print appear beneath her autograph. She hadn't noticed it, let alone read it. It was as if it hadn't been there until the pen started to move. Momentarily, the vintage music took on a distorted sound. He snatched the freshly signed contract, continuing towards the new arrival. "Mr. Tomlinson, let me show you to the masterpiece," he said, herding the man to a medium-sized canvas on the wall. He raised his hand and gestured to the piece as they stood before it. When Mr. Tomlinson saw the picture, he just stared, trying to contain his emotions. One hand began to tap furiously on his leg. No words came from his tightly clamped lips as the director looked expectantly at him. A hushed conversation began. She was too far away to hear what was being said, but Tomlinson was clearly very unhappy. They whispered back and forth, and each time the angry customer spoke, he tapped the side of his leg in defense. Marie moved closer to see the painting for herself. It showed Tomlinson in an incredibly lifelike reproduction. There was no question that whoever created this was a twisted genius with a sadistic, very dark imagination. It showed different stages of a nightmarish scenario. Tomlinson was pointing a shotgun at a pretty blonde woman who sat with a handsome suitor. He obviously recognized both the woman and the suitor. The faces revealed horror in their most terrible moment of fear. "How do you know what my wife looks like? Why is she holding hands with Guy?" he said in astonishment. The director did not answer. The next stage showed the male suitor on the floor with his head obliterated. She gasped, taking the image like a hammer to the face and covering her mouth. The final portion of the image was by far the worst. Her eyes welled as she saw a scene of despair and evil. This final visual punishment showed Mr. Tomlinson having hung himself inside a blood-soaked room. Four bodies lay at his feet. The first was the handsome suitor. The second was clearly the pretty blonde, shot and beaten almost beyond recognition. The last two were twin girls with lovely blonde hair. These girls were motionless, one with an enormous injury to her abdomen. Her white, frilly dress bore a very deep, perfectly circular red hole. The other girl was face down, having tried to run. The back of her head was missing. Splattered everywhere was rich, ruby-red blood. Something very peculiar was hidden within the image. It was subtle against the swirling vision of purgatory, but beneath the dead bodies, the ground had opened, just slightly, almost camouflaged by the blood and matter. There was a hint of some endless abyssal pit beneath. She could see what looked like a clawed hand reaching out, about to drag something down into the bowels of hell. She felt lightheaded again. The hand seemed so real that for a heart-stopping moment, it appeared to move. She reared back in terror, overcome with a deep sinking feeling. She was in grave danger. Evil and misery surrounded her like an invisible cloud. The disturbing painting had started to look more like a photograph, or somewhere between a photograph and a painting. Whoever it was, whatever it was in that picture, it seemed alive, waiting. But waiting for what? A feeling of dread had risen through her as she looked around at the art. She felt something deadly approaching. Perhaps her eyes were playing tricks on her. She returned to the trained suicide piece and scanned it more carefully this time. Her eyes hit upon something. It, too, concealed a dark creature.
In the far right corner of the painting, a red-eyed demon lurked in the shadows. This thing was disguised by the commotion around it, almost blending into the chaos. Cracks in the ground revealed a dark underworld below. She looked at the painting. She looked at another portrait, and another, and another. "My God," she cried silently through cupped hands. They all hid menacing beasts rising from darkness. And all of the beasts looked real, organic, alive. Suddenly a sound from behind the counter startled her, and she snapped her head around. She realized now that this was where the crackling music was coming from, but still she could see no source. Slowly she began moving forwards, and again heard that sound. The music played in the background, but there was something else. Another odd noise. She stepped around to the other side of the counter and stopped dead. What she saw was not possible, incomprehensible. Surrounded by piles of canvases was a very large black hole. Labels for each pile read, "Refused, destroyed, not displayed." From deep within, Liberace played continuously, this time her grand's favorite, the Boogie Woogie. She stared down into endless blackness with disbelief. A winding staircase descended further than she could see or imagine. Deep inside, perhaps from the very pit, was a glowing red mist. It rose and fell inside this unfathomable gateway, like the breath of evil. Her mind told her to run far away, but her body refused. Suddenly, her eyes fixed upon the refused pile. There at the top, as if to taunt her, was a picture of a woman she recognized instantly. Looking, as she looked shortly before she vanished, was her gran. A disgusting, slimy creature was dragging her into a dark ravine as she screamed helplessly. Marie stood nailed to the ground as the enigma of the disappearance suddenly emerged before her. She stood praying that she might somehow avoid a similar fate. But very suddenly, something slashed through her dreadful thoughts. A creeping black mass materialized in the hole and began emerging silently from the mist. Her eyes were wide with terror as it crawled slowly up the stairs, making that sound. As it moved over the steps, her heart pounded so loudly she thought it might hear. As it ascended, she could see it was very large and black and was carrying something to the surface. She stood perfectly still without making a sound. As it reached the top of the stairs, her body shook uncontrollably as she tried to remain quiet. Shivers and shudders rippled through her as she began to wet herself. Tears fell silently down her twitching cheeks as fright held her tightly. The thing slowly extended a terrifying black clawed hand from the hole, placing a fresh painting onto the ground. It hid within the hole, allowing only its hand and arm into the light. Slowly it retrieved a canvas before dragging this back down, down, down into the blackness. As it disappeared from view, she was finally able to move again, but could only pace slowly, such was her shock. She moved back to the front of the shop, praying, begging silently to escape unnoticed. Mr. Tomlinson looked as if he were on the verge of tears too, as he stood forced to drink in the painful terror before him. He had no idea that its creator lay fathoms below. "This is just awful," he said, fighting back tears. "How can I put this disgrace on my wall? My children, my wife, my brother, all blown to pieces by my gun?" The director snapped his head away from the painting and stared at him. "Blown to pieces by you, not the gun," said the director, a firm accusatory tone charging his words. Mr. Tomlinson stood very close to the director and seemed about to strike as he squared up to the lanky devil. At that moment, both men noticed Marie heading for the door. The director's eyes caught her like blades. She froze, too scared to run. Tomlinson instantly calmed himself. "I'm sorry, I have to go," he said, turning to leave. "Aren't you forgetting something?" said the director. This was a threat, a deadly, unspeakable threat. Tomlinson paused for a moment. The director walked over, placing his mouth very close to Tomlinson's ear. "Condition 2. You must display your piece prominently in your home at all times for the lifetime of the contract," said the director, placing a claw-like hand on the man's shoulder and holding it there tightly.
Tomlinson curled his lips, exposing gritted teeth, and spat his reply. I will not. He brushed the director's hand from his shoulder, as if ridding himself of a curious wasp before it stung. He left the gallery silently without looking back. Marie stood as if she just witnessed a murder. She was now staring the killer in the face. The director's eyes bore into her, daring her to say something. She did not speak. He turned away and began labeling yet more art. There were so many. Holstein, Jones, Breyer, Hare, Wellington. Hundreds of people had signed these contracts, but none of them knew the terrible, unthinkable, impossible mistake they'd made. She began backing towards the door, desperately hoping that somehow she could just forget the whole thing. Your picture will be ready in 1 hour, he said, without even turning to face her. I have to go. I can't wait anymore. Never mind, she said, fumbling for the handle behind her, but keeping her eyes fixed on this life predator. Then it will be delivered to you. Good night. She opened the door and somehow fell from the infernal gallery. As she hit the cold, damp pavement, the door swung shut, as if spitting her out. She lay like a discarded toy until a man leaned down to help her. He was the first in a long queue of waiting customers gathered quietly outside. Like lambs to the slaughter, they had been led to the gates of hell. A free gift was all it took. She stumbled and stared at the poor waiting souls. They had all been tricked. None of them was going to accept the free filth they were given. They would all respond like Tomlinson, even if they told themselves they wouldn't. That's when it would happen. That's when it would come true. The picture would become their destiny. She ran the best part of a mile and did not look back. It felt as if something pursued her. It was behind her, above her, beneath her, even inside her. She threw open the front gate, almost breaking it from the hinges. In her frenzy, she couldn't find her keys. Suddenly, the door swung open. It was the babysitter. Sorry, didn't mean to scare you. Marie rushed inside, slamming the door, brushing past without even responding, not yet able to speak. Everything all right, she said. You're late. I'll put Maisie to bed. She composed herself and walked into the kitchen, trying to catch her breath. I'll make us a cup of tea before I head off. You take a shower. The babysitter started to make tea and switched on the TV. A local news report just a few miles away caught Marie's attention.
The murders occurred as David Tomlinson returned home from work. In a jealous rage, he killed his wife and brother Guy Tomlinson. Shooting them both, he proceeded to kill his twin daughters before taking his own life.
Marie stood open-mouthed. It was already happening. She turned white with shock.
You're scaring me, what's wrong? Said the babysitter.
Marie could barely speak, but forced a reply.
Just stay here tonight, all right? She said, fighting back tears.
She raced upstairs and stood in the hot shower, willing the hot water to wash it all away.
This isn't happening. If I tell myself it's not real, then it's not real.
Suddenly, through the fizzing water, she heard what sounded like a knock at the front door. Only mumbling voices and then the door closing could be made out as she jumped from the shower. She jumped so quickly that she slid into the bathroom door. She tore her bathrobe from the hook and flew down the stairs.
Who was that?
Oh, a man came to bring you a parcel, said the babysitter, pointing to a large rectangular package on the table.
There were no markings on it, but she knew exactly what it was. She felt an invisible demon's hands cradling her, filling her with dread. Forcing herself over to the table, she tore the brown wrapping slowly. Instantly, she recoiled. This was a very personal nightmare. It was her nightmare. Deep reds and purples leapt from the canvas, grabbing her by the throat. It showed her in the very same kitchen of her home, pouring boiling water from a kettle all over her own head. In the image, she was laughing maniacally. One hand was stabbed to the top of the counter with a large knife. In the next portion, she was seen forcing a hot iron into her own face. Marie stood transfixed, unable to drag her eyes away. The final part of the horror was the most ominous. It was Maisie's bedroom. She was sleeping soundly as something hideous emerged from the closet. It was huge and black, with parts of it resembling a dog and others spider-like. This thing was oily and wet. It was creeping out of the darkness to take Maisie away. The image moved on, showing this horror using its hideous fanged mouth to devour the child as she fought and screamed. Marie saw herself stood smiling in the aftermath, having cut her own wrists. Marie stood ashen-faced, motionless, collecting her thoughts. She stared at the hateful vision of her future with defeat. It expected her to react with haste,
just like the others. But she simply stared back without moving. It longed for her to strike, coiled, waiting, ready. Finally, she did. Very slowly and very carefully, she carried the painting into the living room, towards the fireplace and the hungry, waiting, roaring flames. She inched forward, the heat rising to her face, the flames causing her eyes to glimmer. Something moved through her as she extended her arms, as if offering the deadly canvas as a feast to the fire.
"I will display you in the most prominent of places," she said, slowly placing the abomination above the waiting flames,
safely on the stone mantel. Over time, she came to live with the intruder. Yes, she did lose the house, and the one after that too. It always went with her. Wherever it was displayed, it fused to the wall with rage, pleading to be burned. It sometimes whispered softly while she slept, tempting her to cover or hide it. It endlessly reminded her of its value and her debts. She largely ignored it, pretending it wasn't there. She carried on as if everything was normal, just like she always did. I hope you enjoyed your first brush with Ghost Elites. It's just one of many amazing stories within the supernatural world of Ghost Elites. You can join the Ghouls of Ghost Elites by buying the book on Kindle, with sequels and print editions on the way. Check out the other horrors available on Amazon right now. Until next time, I don't believe in ghosts, but I'm frightened of them. Farewell.